This is the ESPNU College Football Podcast.
College Football Podcast.
Your host today, Ivan Maisel.
Hello and welcome to the ESPNU College Football Podcast. It's Tuesday, March 23rd. This is Ivan Maisel, senior writer at ESPN.com, and I am joined happily in the midst of March Madness because we're all excited about the onset of spring football by Beano Cook. How are you, Beano?
Excellent, excellent.
Sad that the Pitt Panthers are out of the tournament?
Yeah, I'm not that disappointed. It's unbelievable. They won 13 out of 18 games in league competition. The Big East was down this year. There was no doubt about that, but I can't complain about the season. I'm not one of these guys. You have to win it all or you're a bum. Jamie Dixon did a great job this year.
Yeah, he's a good coach.
Good guy, too.
And that concludes the college basketball portion of our podcast. Sort of. But, you know, I wanted to bring this up because I was getting tweets last week as the tournament began. And, of course, I know you know what Twitter is. At my Twitter account, which is Ivan_Maisel, for those of you who want to follow me, and I hope you do. But getting all kind of tweets last week saying, hey, college football, you see what you're missing? And they're talking about March Madness. And I think that it's completely apples and oranges. So I wanted to talk to you about that. Do you think?
It definitely is. The argument is they have tournaments in every other sport. They have it in lower division football. But that would not be the same as college football. On a major level.
Why not?
That just would not be. I'm for a plus one. Four teams. That's it. Eventually they would have a tournament, I guess. But it's gotten too big as it is. When do you play these games? Well, do you have the finals somewhere around January 20th or 25th? This stuff about having a tournament started back in 1966.
Really?
Yeah, well, really when it got the first boost. Because you had the Alabama, undefeated, number three in the country, and Notre Dame with a tie, number one, and Michigan State, the tie, number two. And Duffy Doherty was very upset, so Rune Arledge said to Duffy, why don't you say something about having a tournament? And that's when it really first got some steam, and then it died, and it comes up all the time now.
Well, and just in case people don't know, Rune Arledge ran ABC Sports.
Ran ABC Sports.
And Duffy Doherty was the Michigan State coach.
We have to do that. You're right.
Yeah.
Although I think our listeners are a lot more intelligent, and the ones who listen to other sports, and I won't name those sports. But again, I just believe that it just would be too big. But a plus one, you have the games at New Year's Day, and then you pick two teams from that, and they play for the national title on January 11th. Look, college sports is too big now.
Yes.
Especially football. And football is not like basketball. Football is a drudgery. These kids who play big-time college football are getting cheated out of a campus life.
Yes, that is true. That's actually true.
Now, how many kids, you told me something yesterday, how many kids from who are freshmen in Florida just enrolled?
Oh, good point. 11, they have 11 freshmen that they signed in February who actually enrolled in class in January so that they could participate in spring practice, which began last week.
Ridiculous. The last free lunch kids have is a senior year in high school. And you miss all those festivities when you're a senior in high school. You know, in April and May. And I just think it's absolutely insane how big college football has gotten. And let me say, when it wasn't as big as it is now, it was just as good.
Well, and plus, what would worry me, Beano, is I'm not necessarily against the tournament, but I don't know how you can have a tournament or a playoff or whatever you want to call it without screwing up what makes the regular season so much fun. Because nobody, nobody, unless they're related to the players themselves, pays any attention to the college basketball regular season.
Good point.
Yet, every, you know, the slogan that college football employs, that every week matters, I think that is, keeps everyone on edge all season, beginning, you know, Labor Day weekend. And I just don't know how you maintain that sort of tension if all you're trying to do is get into a playoff.
Win your conference, correct.
I get the feeling, though, that when you and I discuss this, we're both preaching to the choir because we agree with each other. And I know there are a lot of fans out there
who disagree with us.
And yet, it's, as you point out, been a discussion that's been going on for at least four decades, and it's going to continue. We're not going to settle it today. You brought up Florida, and I was at spring practice, the beginning of spring practice last week. I went, by and large, Beano, to really just watch Urban Meyer and see what he looked like, see how he participated in the first session of spring practice, given the fact that he, as we all know, resigned the job for health reasons on December 26th, rescinded the resignation on December 27th, but said he would be taking a leave of absence to recharge himself. And I got to tell you, he looked good. You know, the color is back in his face. He's put on the 20 pounds he lost over a very emotionally and physically difficult 2009 season. So I think he's back, but I think he will be back in a limited role in terms of how he interacts with the media. I think that's one of the tasks that he's going to push aside, because he can. He doesn't have to talk to us.
No, not when you win those many games.
No, and it reminds me of the change in Mike Krzyzewski, as long as we're on the college basketball tack, after his back problems and health issues in 1995, I believe it was. And when he came back, he removed himself in a lot of ways from dealing with the media on a regular basis. And I wonder how long Meyer is going to do that. It could be that he's just temporary as he continues to try to figure out how to reintegrate himself into the team. And I'm not sure he knows. You know, he said that during the practice after practice, he said that he was trying to figure out how to involve himself in the day. And his offensive coordinator, Steve Adazio, who took over the team while Meyer had his leave of absence, and when I was pressing him on, you know, exactly what did you do and how did you delineate what you did from what Urban was doing, he said it was just sort of a day-to-day thing. I just went in and did what had to be done. So there's a lot of change going on at Florida in this spring. You know, the off the field, obviously, and in the office, obviously, with Meyer. As we pointed out a couple of minutes ago, a lot of freshmen coming in for this spring. The defense has to be completely rebuilt. And then, of course, they've got to replace Tim Tebow, who has been certainly the most visible star in college football for the last four seasons.
It's not going to be easy, and they have to go to Alabama.
That's
true. Right now it's one of the most important games of the year.
Yeah,
the
first weekend in October in Tuscaloosa.
Let me ask you a question as one who was close to the Alabama situation. How is Saban handling all this pressure?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. I was speaking with someone on his staff when I was in Washington with the team a couple of weeks ago, and I ventured thinking, you know, he's won at Alabama. He's shown that he can do it. Is he going to maybe ease off the gas pedal just a little bit? You know, that he's proven what he needs to prove, and now is he going to not ease is not the right word, but you know that he won't be quite as Nick Saban like, quite as intense. And the response I got was pretty much a raised eyebrow. You know, the staff member said, hey, if anything, since the Rose Bowl, he's been more intense.
He would never change.
No.
And even with Urban Meyer.
Yeah.
Those guys just can't change.
No, you're right. It was a naive question and on my part, and probably a hopeful one, thinking that maybe they would see a bigger picture. And I think Urban does, but it's a wrenching change for guys like
Saban. They can't. No, yeah. They don't change.
No, I don't think so. And it will be interesting to watch Meyer as he attempts to negotiate this. I did get a chance, Beano, to speak with or interview John Brantley, who will be a redshirt junior who is replacing Tim Tebow. And he's no slouch. He was the 2006 Gatorade National Player of the Year, which was given to the guy deemed the kid, if I can say that, deemed the best high school player in the country. He's been waiting and waiting, and wanted to give a quick quote from him here on how he feels about the job at hand.
Yeah, I mean, my dad and my uncle played here. Been a Gator fan my entire life. We've had season tickets since 96, and it was always my dream to play in the Swamp.
I mean, that's I guess if you're a Florida fan, the Brantley name does have some magic, and also that's exactly, you want a kid that bleeds orange and blue.
And he does, and it's trying to follow a great player.
Oh, it's, yeah.
I mean, Tebow is one of the great players, not only in the history of the University of Florida, but in the history of college football. But he seems very relaxed. You talk to him, he knows what the pressure is.
Well, there's a couple of things to say about that. You know, the first, Beano, is that he doesn't see himself replacing, you know, one of the greatest players in college football history. He sees him replacing his friend Tim. So I think, you know, from the outside, you have to remember these guys have been together for 3 years. And the other thing is he's grown up not just around the Florida program, but around legends of the Florida program, which is a story I wanted to tell you. His uncle, Scott, was an All-American linebacker at Florida a generation ago. And until the 90s, Scott Brantley's 55 was one of two numbers that Florida had retired. And the other one, of course, was the number 11 worn by Steve Spurrier. Well, when Spurrier returned to Florida in 1990 to be head coach, he decided he didn't want retired numbers. He thought it was, you know, he thought it was just in Steve's way, just sort of dumb. He didn't like that. He didn't like to be gotted up. So he decided he was going to unretire the numbers. And Norm Carlson, your friend who is the SID emeritus at Florida, told me this story last week and then I confirmed it with Scott later that day because he came to practice to watch John practice. And Spurrier called Brantley up and said, you know, Scotty, I'm going to unretire the numbers. Just wanted to let you know, see what you thought about that. And, you know, Scott Brantley said to me, what am I going to say to him? No.
Yeah.
You go ahead. So that's why Spurrier tried to spin it as they would be the only two numbers ever retired. And the reason that it came up at all is that I asked Norm, did he think that Tim Tebow's number 15 would be retired? And he just sort of chuckled and told me that story. So we will, if precedent is any indication, we will see a number 15 worn again at Florida. And we will all watch with interest as John Brantley takes over the Florida offense.
They're going to be good.
He's a talented quarterback. He's got a great arm. He's a big 6'3", 220-pound kid. He's been there for 3 years. I think he'll step right in. One team that will not have a returning quarterback next season, Beano, the Oregon Ducks, Pac-10 champions. Jeremiah Masoli suspended last week by head coach Chip Kelly after pleading out to charges involving a on-campus burglary. Masoli will not play in the 2010 season. he has been suspended for the 2010 season, as someone pointed out. Well, LeGarrette Blount was suspended for the 2009 season, and yet Chip Kelly later backed up and allowed him to play, and that is certainly a possibility. However, Masoli did not endear himself to the Ducks, the coaches, or the administration, because when they asked him about the incident originally, he did not tell them the truth. And when the truth came out, I think not only did they suspend him for his involvement in a crime, but they also for lying to them. And so he is pretty much under the jail at Oregon for the foreseeable future. He's supposed to meet with Chip Kelly in a few days to discuss that future. I don't know. How much do you think this at all puts any tarnish on their season of 2009?
No.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. I don't think so either. But why don't you think so?
I just don't.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to play this year. I don't see how he can, Coach Kelly can change his mind on this.
No, I think there is a difference. I think.
Big difference.
Yeah. With LeGarrette Blount, I think he wanted to see how Blount adhered to what he asked him to do, and he saw progress there. And so he allowed him to reach the carrot that he had been dangling out in front of him and let him come back and play at the end of the season. But this is different. This is much more, I think it's more, obviously more serious than what Blount did. And
much more serious.
Yes. Not the only person that is being disassociated from the Oregon program. Athletic director Mike Bellotti, who has been in coaching for 35 years and moved upstairs a year ago to make room for Chip Kelly. And Bellotti moved upstairs to be the athletic director. His tenure lasted almost 9 months. He announced last Friday that he's going to work for a cable network, ESPN, as a matter of fact, and he will be in the booth calling football games. I have to say, I am not surprised.
Well, you tell the story yesterday when you called somebody up.
Well, we heard, and this is an indication of how big a company ESPN is, I guess. You know, we don't tell secrets on campus. And, you know, those of us in .com began to hear rumors Friday that Bellotti was going to resign. A press conference was being called at Oregon, and we're trying to figure out what's going on. And it turned out what he was doing was coming to work with us. So we certainly found out, by journalistic digging, not because we knew what was going on a couple of floors away from us. But anyway, in the course of trying to find out what was going on, I reached out to some people I know in the athletic department in Oregon, and my supposition had been that here's a guy who'd been a coach for 35 or 36 years, and as I wrote last Friday, athletic directors are no longer about coaching. You know, they are about fundraising, they are about marketing, and it's you are the CEO of a 8- or 9-figure budget a year company. And that's the last thing that most coaches, especially one of Bellotti's generation, he's close to 60 years old, would be interested in. And I think when he saw an escape route from that job with ESPN, he grabbed it. So I had put out this feeler to someone in the athletic department, and he texted me back and just said, hey, he said, on a 1 to 10 scale, the best day an AD ever has is a 4. It's a great line, and I think it absolutely captures, especially for someone who wants to be in coaching, both because you're working with kids and because you've got a competitive desire that you can't satisfy. I think going upstairs and and being in that coat and tie job, which is what it has become these days, is the last thing you want to do.
It's like Bartlett Giamonte when he was the president of Yale. He quit because he got tired of not being on campus. He wanted to be with the professors. He wanted to be with the students. He wanted to go down to the tables down at Maury's. But he had to go out and keep raising money. And college presidents, that's what they do now.
That's what they do, and that's what athletic directors do. And, of course, you know,
not any fun.
Bart Giamatti, much like Mike Bellotti, had a very similar job. He left the presidency of Yale and went to be commissioner of Major League Baseball. Yeah.
He just, it's a different world, and college athletics, it's a business. It's strictly a business now. And 40 years ago, when I used to argue with Jim Lampley on ABC that he thought players should be paid, and I did not, I've changed my mind. I think players should be paid now. Football players should be paid because it's 12 months a year. They don't lead a campus life. They're not home in the summer. Somebody should do a story at ESPN, pick out five colleges, and find out how many kids were in summer school 50 years ago. Well, 50 years ago, I was at Pitt. As the SID, I would say in the summer of 1959 or 1960, it might have been four kids in summer school. Now, everybody's in summer school, and they're in the weight room. It's ridiculous.
Well, let me ask you this, Beto. The money they are raising is not, you know, it's not laying around for them to pay the kids. That's why they're paying these coaches these seven-figure contracts.
Yeah, I mean,
what are they going to pay the kids with?
Yeah. And this stuff about all the TV money they talk about that the Big Ten gets, you know, they don't get to keep it.
No.
I see that the Clemson coaches, and they probably deserve the raise. Assistant coaches got an average of 56% raise. It comes back to Art Rooney. The late Art Rooney, the principal owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers in 1964, and I've told this story a million times, that Pete Rozelle said every team's going to get $1 million in the NFL. Now, this is 1964 now, and everybody's screaming, and the owners are jumping up except Art Rooney. He's smoking a cigar, and Arthur Modell from the Cleveland Browns goes over. He says, Art, $1 million each. Rooney takes the cigar out of his mouth and said, Arthur, what makes you think we're going to keep it all? it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, you live up to your, Art Rooney also said you live up to your means.
Yes, you do.
If you're an athlete or not, if you're a guy working in a company and you get a raise, you might move to a bigger house or a better school district. It's the way life is. You live up to your means. And these coaches.
Oh, yeah.
Will spend the money.
Oh, they spend the money. They all have planes at their disposal now. You know, they all,
How about cell phones?
They all have, hot and cold running cell phones. I mean, they've got everything. They've got, you know, football has become on the college level at the highest level. It's incredible the amount of resources at their disposal. The state-of-the-art computer systems and video systems. You know, they're now hiring more staff. The NCAA is going to allow them to hire more staff to break down video, you know, which 20 years ago, the NCAA, in an attempt to rein in costs, limited the number of staff members that football coaches could have. And that almost lasted 20 years. I think it was actually 91 or 92 when that was put in. So it's just the way the world works. And, you know, to think that there's money laying around to pay the kids, it's just not there. You know, they could.
I agree, but I think they should get paid.
They could easily write legislation.
They should get $15 a month.
Well,
in the 50s, they call it laundry money.
Yeah, sure. But then the issue becomes if you pay the football players.
In today's world, yeah.
Yeah, you got to pay the women's volleyball players.
That's the big.
That's federal law. I think, you know, I'm not a lawyer and don't want to play one on a podcast, but I would think that the women's volleyball players could, you know, make a pretty good case for that.
Well, the Congress could change that. I mean,
that's true.
Football's completely different than all the other sports. Period.
And thank God. So
yeah.
Let's look at the birthday calendar, Beno. It's a great week to be a Hall of Fame coach. We're going to work backwards. March 28th, Buck Shaw, who, as you informed me yesterday, played for Newt Rockne at Notre Dame and then went on to be his greatest fame as a college head coach was at Santa Clara. and the University of California, but he also coached at North Carolina State and Air Force. Alex Agassi.
Well, he was a right tackle. You told me on the...
Oh, yeah, that's right. He was right tackle who blocked for George Gipp. Buck Shaw, and then was the first coach of the San Francisco 49ers.
Yep.
So, how do you pronounce that last name? A-G-A-S-E, that was at Northwestern and...
Alex Agassi.
Agassi, okay. March 27th, and then two guys I wanted to focus on because we both are very familiar with them. Rip Engel, longtime coach at Penn State, birthday March 26th.
Yeah, he was at Brown, and Brown is not an easy place to win. In 1949, Brown went 8-1. They lost to Princeton. Their slogan was 8-9 in 49. And Engel was offered the job at Penn State 1950, and he took this quarterback along with him, and he said, well, coach, Rip, I want to go to law school. Well, you know, well, come here, coach a couple of years, save some money, then go to law school. And in 1955, he told his dad that I'm going to stay, and his dad said, do you think you can make a difference? And he said, yeah, I think I can, and it's obvious you don't have to be Perry Mason to figure out I'm talking about Joe Paterno. And he came with him and to Penn State. Unbelievable. It's unbelievable. It really is. In Paterno's second year, 1951. Now, this is 1951, before the interstates. He and a couple buddies drove to the Sugar Bowl.
Wow.
You go through all those towns and all those speed traps. And if you have a license plate from Pennsylvania, in those southern states, they're just waiting.
You're
going to
get a ticket, yeah.
But Paterno stayed, obviously. And the lawyers lost a good man, although we have too many lawyers and not enough quarterbacks. That's part of the problem.
That's a good point. Rip Engel, of course, remained the coach at Penn State with Paterno at his side through the 1965 season. And then
what happened was that Yale offered the job to Joe Paterno. And Yale and Penn State said, look, Joe, next year would be Rip's last year, and you would take over in 66.
The first head coach in waiting.
Yeah.
You know, here we are arguing about that now and whether that's a good idea, and Joe Paterno did it nearly a half century ago. That's a great point.
It was 1 year.
Well, but still.
It was 1 year, and then they went and hired another coach, Yale. So, but Paterno, he would have coached. He would have gone to Yale in 65, but he stayed, and you know the rest.
The other head coach we wanted to highlight during the birthdays this week on the College Football Hall of Fame calendar, Frank Howard, the longtime coach at Clemson for, I think, close to 30 years. And Frank Howard had been a teammate of Bear Bryant at Alabama. They were great friends and competitors. Bryant always made room for Clemson on his schedule, in part because he liked to collect wins, but also because of his regard for his friend and former teammate, Frank
Howard. And the game was always played in Tuscaloosa.
Yes. Yeah. I think he might have gone up there a time
or
two.
Yeah, occasionally.
There's a great story about the relationship Bear Bryant had with Frank Howard, you know, and it, Frank Howard was a lineman, a big man, and he got tired of hearing Bear Bryant talk about how his, you know, little old scrawny lineman could just outquick people. And Howard, you know, would say, oh, they ain't so little. So Bryant, you know, Howard came into Tuscaloosa either for a clinic or for something. I don't remember what the event was. And he's touring the Alabama locker room, and he makes a big deal saying, I want to check out your scales.
Yeah.
So he gets on the scale, and Howard weighed every bit of 270, and he gets on the scale, and it reads 237. And what Brian had done is that he had, you know, rigged the scale to show that, you know, just to see what Howard would do. And Howard looks at 237, and he turns around and says, well, Bear, they're accurate after all.
Yeah. That's another thing about Coach Howard, is I would like you to tell our audience.
Well, there is. He was in the first graduating class at my high school at Murphy High in Mobile in 1927, and I was in the 51st in 1977. So,
how many do you think were in his first class?
Boy, that's a good question.
How many were in your class?
550.
My God.
Yeah, it was and remains a big school. And Murphy is, it's a great high school. It holds a special place in a lot of hearts in Mobile. And speaking of which, one of the 11 freshman enrollees at Florida this spring is a player from Murphy, Solomon Patton.
Tell him what happened when you went up to talk to him.
Well, I did. I had practice last week. Urban Meyer had said after practice he had singled out Solomon Patton for how well he played in the first practice. Patton is one of the reasons he signed at Florida is that he is 5'9 and probably doesn't weigh 170, but extremely quick and fast. Urban Meyer has always always liked players like that, and that's not a guy you usually see in Nick Saban's lineup. So that might be why he ended up at Florida. But at any rate, I wanted to meet him because he had gone to Murphy, so I went up to him afterwards and handed him my ESPN business card and introduced myself. And, you know, you got this kid, he's been on campus, maybe 10 weeks, and he is absolutely baffled why anybody at ESPN would be talking to him. And I just said, I wanted to meet you because I also went to Murphy. And he just, his face just beamed. He was so excited that, you know, it was a touch of home, even though it's been a long time since I was at Murphy. And he just said, man, I love that school.
Yeah.
And he relaxed and he started telling me about how hard he's been working to learn the plays. And it was a neat moment. So
for him and for you.
For me, yeah, I was thrilled. I was thrilled. I always, you always love to see your high school. It's like you talking about Darrell Clark from Penn State and Kiske. You both went to Kiske.
Yeah, and so did Harry Stoudemire.
And I think he was before you, though, right? He was one of the four horsemen, in case people...
He was in the same class with Bob Mathias.
Well, there you go.
Who won the decathlon, and then came to Kiske and then went to Stanford.
That's right, and became a congressman and was a two-time Olympic gold medalist.
Absolutely.
So we got some emails, Bino.
Hey, good.
Let's see. This is from Paul. It's either Burkett or Burkett in Concord, New Hampshire. I think Paul has emailed me before. Says, can you and Bino give me some history on when and why the polls expanded from 20 to 25 teams?
That's easy. You give it.
Well, it was in 1989 was the first season they expanded, and I'm pretty sure it was to get the names of five more schools in the paper.
And the coaches,
yes.
There was one year where the coaches poll only, I don't know what year this was.
I think it was 67.
They only did 10 teams.
Yeah. And it was such a resounding failure that they immediately went back.
Well, that's why they went to 25, though, coaches. Well, I made it in the final poll.
Yes.
Yeah, that's... any other interesting emails?
I'm sorry, the AP was the one that went down to 10 teams. I'm looking in my NCAA guide now, and they... 67.
Right, the coaches would have raised Cain about that.
Yeah, 67 was the last year they did it. Jonathan Cosgrove, a Texas fan, says, several times on the podcast you guys have mentioned the College Hall of Fame birthday calendar. I have checked their website, but they do not have an online store. Is there any way that these dates could be published online? And the only way I could think is if I sat down and uploaded them. And Jonathan, I hate to tell you this, that's not going to happen. I have a feeling that if you called the College Football Hall of Fame, which is in South Bend, Indiana, that they might send you a calendar. Ben Patch.
You could find an intern.
Yeah. We need a podcast intern, Jay.
Well, that goes without saying.
Yes. It's a great idea. Ben Patch from San Francisco writes, love the podcast and the great discussion of past, present, and future that you and Bino bring to every conversation. I'm a lifelong fan of the Maize and Blue, and it's been a rough couple of years in Ann Arbor. Ben is ready to do away with Rich Rodriguez and wonders if Tony Dungy, who grew up in Jackson, only 30 miles from Ann Arbor, and has unquestioned integrity, would be a Michigan man and ready to take over. What do you think of that, Bino?
Oh, I have no idea whether he would want to do it. I have no idea. He would be a good choice, but yeah, I think Rodriguez, every year we pick the coaches on the hot spot the most, and for 2 years in a row we picked the coach and who was number one, and he wasn't there the next year. Last year we both picked Charlie Weiss. Well, I don't know if Rodriguez is number one, but he's in the top three. He has to win this year. Has to win. Now, what does winning mean? At least 8 or 9 games.
I still believe he's going to do it there, because his track record is too long and too successful. But you're right. They've got to show some progress this year. I think that's absolutely fair to say. Bino?
Yeah, we fooled him again.
We fooled him again, even during the midst of March Madness. This was a fun show. I hope everybody enjoyed it. I wanted to remind you, hey, Jay, give them your Twitter account and your Facebook.
I'm at The Real Pod Vader on Twitter.
That's right.
And Pod Vader is on Facebook as well.
Pod Vader is on Facebook. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Ivan_Mazel. You can find me on Facebook as well. Thanks a lot, Bino, for the ESPNU College Football Podcast.
When will you be back? Give him the date.
Give him the date. April 6th.
April 6th.
April 6th, Tuesday, April 6th. I will be in Boise, Idaho, so that's going to be interesting logistically. Can't wait to figure that one out. But until then, Bino, thanks for downloading us.
We'd like to thank you for listening to today's show. For more great podcasts, check out the Pod Center page at ESPNradio.com.